I'm Barbara Bray. Welcome to my Rethinking Learning podcast, where I have conversations with inspirational educators, thought leaders, and change agents. This is Barbara Bray, and I am, you know, I'm just so excited. This is just one of those days where I go, I'm going to get to talk to Angela.
And I get to talk to Barbara.
This is Angela Myers with me, and I'm so lucky. Thank you for being here, Angela.
I'm so honored to be here, and way to go for restarting the podcast. I mean, people don't understand how much work it is and what a gift it is to our community. So I'm really just so honored to be here.
Oh, thank you. But you know what? I have a little intro. Everybody knows you, Angela, but I still like to put something out there and tell a little bit about you. So here we go. Angela's a world-renowned author, an entrepreneur, an international keynote speaker and educator. And she has this transformative message of the importance of mattering. And it has the power to unleash the genius in us all. I love that. I just, you know, I can't even remember how long I've known you, Angela.
I was trying to think about that before we started. And do you think it's 10 years?
It might even be more than that, because we were both going, I've been going to ISTE since 97.
Wow.
And then I got you on social media and constantly, you know, treat you out. And I always look, you know, I try to find you at the conferences so we can at least get our yearly hug, you know. And I'm just so glad to have a chance to have a, you know, conversation with you. So welcome, 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 Angela.
My pleasure. Hello, everybody.
And you know, I always like to start these out with about you and your family and a little background.
I am a mom of two of the most perfect children in the world, just like every other mom. And I'm just like on cloud nine because I just spent the week with them over Christmas break. And my son's 22 and pursuing his passion. My daughter is living the life of a college student, going to the University of Hawaii. So they're both getting their, you know, getting to travel and see the world and try to find out who their best selves are. And it's just great to look back and have your kids, you know, live out, and you see things that you've said to them and taught them, and you see it in their lives, like you didn't mess up that much. So yes, and I live right south of Denver in a little town called Lone Tree. And I'm only 2 years in Denver, but I love it, love it, love it. It's like a perfect little place here. The weather, the people, the mountains that are beautiful all around me. It just reminds me to feel grateful every single day.
I don't know Lone Tree.
It's just right. It's actually where Park Meadows Mall is. That's pretty much what it has. So it's just right. You know, it's like 15 minutes from Denver. And so it's nice.
Just like everyone else, we got into education. Can you give a little bit of your background?
To change lives and change the world. I was in medicine before I became, you know, came to my senses. I still kept my passion. I was in neuroscience and I had a background in linguistics. And so I always was fascinated with the brain and learning, especially how language influences both of those things. But my heart wasn't in medicine. It was in education. So 31 years now, in this amazing field, and every single day, honestly, I can say this truly honestly, is a get to do, because I see everyone as a learner. So I don't differentiate, like when I'm in front of kids, I'm the teacher. When I'm in front of grownups, I'm the learner. It is, you are teacher and learner simultaneously with anybody you get a chance to be with.
Wow. I don't know if you know that I was a dental hygienist before.
Oh, you were? So you had medical background too?
Yeah, I did. And I also I taught dental hygiene, and that's when I realized.
You wanted to teach?
I wanted to teach. And it's funny, one of my friends, I don't know if you know my friend Sarah Armstrong.
I don't. If I saw her face, I might know her. So I don't want to say I don't know her, because I'm so used to just seeing people's faces. So I may know her.
I'll make sure you meet her. But she once said, oh, you went from dental flossing to mental flossing.
Oh, I love that. So
isn't that great?
Oh, that's great. I went into the same, you know, for the same reason, because of my education really did not seem to get the best of me. I felt like I, and same with my children. So I felt like it's time we got to do something and change
it. Absolutely.
Is that why you developed Choose to Matter?
Well, Choose to Matter developed itself. So I think that I have always, from as long as I can remember, from the moment I chose education, been deeply aware of my purpose. And I know that I am here to be a catalyst of impact and a catalyst of positive change. And so education is supporting anyone at any level, whether that's a teacher or a leader or a five-year-old who wants to take action and responsibility to make their lives in the world a better place. And so I really, that's the foundation of Choosing to Matter, helping people figure out what their unique contribution to the world is going to be. But it wasn't until I did a TED Talk about 5 years ago when I was thinking about all the topics that I could say and like, how do you in 17 minutes tell the world how you're going to change the world? And we change the world by showing up as the best version of ourselves and presenting that to the world, offering everything that we are. And understanding how hard that task is, that it isn't, you know, mattering isn't an event, it's not a theme, it's not a message to make people feel good about themselves. It is a commitment. It is a disciplined, fierce, courageous commitment to figuring out on your own how to offer up everything you are to the world, but then developing that sense of confidence, that sense of calmness, that sense of courage in other people to do the same. And so Choose to Matter sort of developed itself because mattering is a choice. And sometimes it's a minute by minute, breath by breath choice to be brave, to be fully yourself, to be fiercely committed to your own truth and authenticness when there's so many ways that we can hide in the world because we listen to whether it's our voice or other voices. Those voices that say, you know what, you're just a teacher or you're just a mom or you're not enough doing what you're doing right now. You need this and that. And it's just so hard to stay on top of our own worthiness. And we must commit to worthiness being our daily practice. It is as critical to us as food, water, shelter, and air. We can't lead or learn without it.
I'm just sitting here going, I just love this.
I talk too much, because I'm very passionate about this topic, as you might. Because you've seen this too. We talk about this light bulb moment, but this is bigger than a light bulb moment. There is, when you encounter someone with a sense of not only confidence, but a sense of calmness in who they are, unapologetically pure and courageous in how much they don't waver by outside forces. It is truly contagious. It's absolutely inspiring. And you want to be that kind of person. And when I look into kids' eyes and I'm telling them that they have a responsibility to contribute their best self to the world, I can't do that authentically if I'm not living in that same realm. So it is an act of bravery. It takes a lot of courage to be who you truly are. No hiding, no holding back, no hesitating. And I get inspiration from five-year-olds because they're the only ones who live fully and fiercely their genius out loud. They're unwavering. Wow. About what they believe, what they know, sometimes even what their purpose is. And then we create conditions for doubt in school rather than a lot of times conditions for courage.
So I want to ask you about that because I went into the field the same way as you and I said, I'm going to make a difference. And it was all about, I'm into this now passion and purpose and the why and,
absolutely.
And the neuroscience and all of that. But when you come into a school or district or you're doing a keynote and someone comes up to you and says, that sounds all good and everything, but I have all these barriers, or what do you say? How do you get them over that? Or what do you say to them?
Well, this is science. It is not only science. People are drowning in insignificance at every single level, and it is affecting our world at a prolific and pandemic rate. We now can link through science mattering to mortality. When people don't feel like they matter, when their desire to be essential to other people isn't honored and recognized, the repercussions of that range from everything from apathy to full out agony. And in many cases, as you and I know, people want to matter more than they want to live. So we have an increased rate in suicide in young people, in communities among us, especially communities that serve, that lead. It isn't the people like on the street that are necessarily like in despair. I'm getting calls from soldiers. I'm getting calls from nurses. I'm getting calls from individuals in churches that serve other people and see the pain that mattering or feeling like you don't matter causes. In fact, I was in Canada a couple weeks before Christmas speaking to a community north of Toronto, and I was working with the police department, and the police chief that runs their 911 said many people think that 911 is about if you have a burglar coming or there's a fire. Their number one place, like 80% of their 911 calls are about mattering, that their city is in prolific despair. And I want what is frustrating about the message being seen as a nicety and not a necessity is that the epidemic is invisible. People aren't going it when other essential needs. So mattering is an essential need. We don't simply want to know we matter. We need to know we matter. It truly is a DNA thing, not an ego thing.
I just want to jump in for a second because, I feel like it's really important to start when the kids are really, everyone is very, very young, and work with parents, and all they have to do is say the wrong word and that child remembers it. And same with the teacher. I had an experience where they said something to me and I, to this day, I still remember how sad I was. I didn't matter. And your idea of getting this across, it's so big right now.
It is. I think because people are talking more and are more open about the role or the urgency of feeling being needed and valued. And organizations like Gallup. So when I discuss this idea of mattering and the urgency to create a culture and an environment that sustains mattering, it is a very consistent leap to the economic repercussions. So Gallup did a study with 100 million adults across 116 industries, and 88% of the current workforce is deliberately, desperately disengaged. So just at disengagement, I'm not talking about despair and agony. I'm just talking about simple apathy, disengagement. Costs the American taxpayer $15 trillion a year trying to fix this. Look how much money we put into bullying programs, into suicide prevention, into just look at what we do with the idea of engaging kids, the amount we spend on technology in hopes that it does it. And over and over and over, no matter how much money we commit to, the program doesn't sustain. It fails. Because mattering isn't a program or a policy. It is an inside-out commitment to one's own worthiness. And it needs to be seen and defined in that way.
So, you talk about talking to police departments and other groups. So this is not just an education problem. This is a community.
1,000%.
And that link, that study, I'd love you to share that so I can put it on the blog post that goes with this.
I did a keynote about a year ago with the Mayo Clinic, their Center for Innovation, and they declared mattering as our most urgent medical pandemic. I just did a medical conference with 140 hospitals saying the link to what I call MQ, an individual's mattering quotient, can be linked to not only money in terms of resources spent to retain talent, to recruit talent, to create a culture where people want to show up every day, but it can be linked, as I said, to mortality. When people, Harvard did an end of life study. It was the longest longitudinal study on well-being. They tracked individuals for 74 years and basically asked them what they thought about, what they worried about in the last days on their deathbed. And it wasn't about, I just want to know that I was loved. It was unequivocally, I want to know that I mattered. I want to know that I matter to somebody. That's an essential need.
Wow. This is all of these studies and things that even that you said there was a matter quotient.
I'm working. This is one of the big announcements for Choose to Matter this year. I've been working with two universities, Denver University and Georgia Tech University. And we have been working through the algorithm for MQ and what that would mean if we could come up with that in an authentic, scientifically based, rigorous way, in the same way Dan Goldman did for EQ. We have then the potential to impact at a profound level. If we don't have to wait till end of life to look back and say, did my life matter? We don't have to wait till we have a mass decision, a life-changing decision about one's purpose. What happened to me in college, where I can't imagine if I would have gone into medicine, what kind of human I would be if I wasn't teaching. I found the intersection of my passion and purpose. What if we could guide kids with actual data that says, this is my pathway to increase my own mattering quotient? That if I choose this, I'm going to be in charge of my own destiny. It's not something that's accidental, and it's not something that's elusive. People thought 30 years ago that emotional intelligence was an elusive thing. It was a nice to have. We all know the power of EQ. We have another revolution on our hands if we knew the power of MQ.
Oh, I love this. This is
isn't this exciting?
Well, you know, I've done database development.
And,
there's a lot about me you don't know, so I'll have to share with you down the road. But when you're pulling the algorithms together, it's my whole head went, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, I want to know. Oh well, the if then, and if they say this, they go to then, and it's just really powerful because I know that if kids could say, you're not the only one, because sometimes they feel they're the only one that's treated that way, that they don't belong. And we need to make sure everybody has a sense of belonging.
Absolutely. Again, this is a DNA level need. And I think that I want this message to remind everyone that this is not something that we can take for granted. It's not something that we can brush off or blow off. I always say, and here's the science, this is not an ideology. This is straightforward biology. And so when you understand and you see mattering from the perspective of a basic need, then everything changes. Then it's, how do I integrate this into my culture, into my classroom, into my life, into my world?
You know, I see, I was going to ask you a whole bunch of other things, but I'm really enjoying this discussion. I want to keep going with this because I'm doing a whole thing on finding your passion to discover
great.
Your purpose.
Yes.
And it's kind of very similar. And I'm wondering how we can kind of intersect those. And it's just kind of, I got a tingle up my back when you said that.
I fully believe we've been working on MQ for a year. And I think the value of MQ is going to emerge as one of the core determinants of our education, of our place in the world, and our place on the web. The web is advancing itself from a human-centered perspective. And what will move forward, content, what will move forward, communities, what will move forward the world, will be a return to our humanity, because that's what's scarce. Trust is scarce. Loyalty is scarce. Authenticity is scarce. All of these elements remind us that technology exists to advance our humanity. And that's what MQ stands for, the first of its kind technology-enabled advanced algorithm, representing a person's ability to understand, adapt, and embody their significance as compared to a norm of other people at their age, which would be the mattering quotient. And part of that is you increase your mattering quotient when you're operating in your zone of passion. Even if your profession doesn't necessarily involve your passion, you engaging in your passion makes you more skilled, makes you more resilient, makes you more energetic. And so you bring that energy. You might not bring that, like fishing might be your passion. You might not fish for a profession, but you bring a fuller sense of yourself to whatever profession you have because you engaged in and pursued and honored your passion. It absolutely intersects.
So, you know, all of these things that you're bringing up, I mean, bear with me, but I see another book in you.
I'm just like, so I know it's,
Well, you know, I want to just mention you have several books, and I need to tell you that I've used your Passion-Driven Classroom. I've shared it out, and I've shared out the Haptitudes. I've shared out all of these, but you're hitting on something right now that I feel, not only can you put in, you know, the MQ, the strategies in a book, but I can see you putting in you said it's not an ideology, but the whole process. It's a biology, which is a great way to, as a title, a subtitle for it. I just love this. This is just perfect.
I would say the evolution of all of the books, with a little bit of passion, a little bit of Haptitudes, a little bit is my new book, Genius Matters. And these are lessons like no other lesson that I've created. And I'm building on that because these are lessons that are concrete examples, explicit instruction that is devoted to the principles and practices of essentialness. This isn't warm fuzzy. This is an absolute fierce discipline to own your own worthiness, to develop your story, to find out how to be calm in what you stand for and stand up for. All of these lessons are in Genius Matters. There's 30 lessons, and they walk you up to creating the culture behind Genius Hour. I think the idea when we presented Genius Hour in the Passion-Driven Classroom, it was surrounded by passion, absolutely, and that still matters. What I've evolved to understand is there has to be an intersection with passion and purpose, that your passion alone isn't enough to move you necessarily to action and impact, that when you put your passion towards something bigger than yourself, you find your purpose and that path around that. And then all of those things create and sustain your own worthiness. And that's what Genius Matters is. It's a compilation of lessons that increase your MQ.
We'll have to share that one because I don't have it.
We're giving it away. So the ebook version of it is free for teachers for the next 6 months till the end of the year. So I didn't want to say like, oh, I could, you know, you could matter for $19.99. I'm trying so hard to work with companies and organizations that help me give things away free to teachers. So I will definitely share a link with you, and all the lessons are free.
Oh, they'll love that. Well, this is, you know, Angela, you're such an inspiration, and I can tell your passion. And when you talk like this, it just gets me all excited. I can't wait to see what you're going to do and get to your next speech and see you at a conference. One of the things that I could go in so many directions here, but I almost don't want to, because I want to keep it on this, because to me, this is big.
I think, and I know this is a big statement, and I definitely don't want people to think that this is a pessimistic outlook, because this is, we are hope. We are hope for our children. We are hope for one another, and we are hope for the world, because insignificance is the single greatest threat to our learning, to our lives, and to the world. And systematic dehumanization happens over time, and it seems like it's out of the blue, but it's little by little by little. It's subtle things like a student who walks through the hall with their head down, afraid of eye contact, a student who just sits alone because they don't think anybody else, they're worthy of anybody else, you know, company, a student who feels alone when they're in a crowd. And you could substitute student and say teacher. You could substitute teacher and say mom or dad. You could substitute that and say any human being, because mattering transcends age and gender and zip code and grade and position and place, because it is a human DNA level need. All of us at some point throughout the day feel like we don't matter.
You know, that it's just, I'm just going to bring up, there was a point in my life where I felt that, I mean, many points.
Absolutely.
And I felt school did it to me and did it to so many children. So this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, and why I know that people need this. And I'm so excited about the MQ.
And I'm so happy to hear that, because I wanted the science behind this, because there's lots of quotients out there. There's a quotient for really every habitude, if you will. But what makes EQ different, and what made it sustainable for 30 years, is that it was grounded in high-level, rigorous academic research. And we wanted MQ to be grounded in the same. So it takes a lot to take a concept that really is our legacy, our destiny, the core of our humanity, and put a number to it. So I want to be slow with this, and I want to invite the community, instead of waiting for the algorithm to just appear and we do something, for us to create with our insight of what needs to be a part of the science or a part of the study. And so I'm working through what that looks like right now. But I think we look for solutions to problems that are big, and we make the assumption that the solution has to be as big as the problem. And if we look to rehumanizing our classrooms as the solution, we find that it doesn't take very much from human beings to be their best selves. And when I asked kids, I have this question that I ask kids, I ask organizations, and I say, what would make you run to school? And what would make you run to work? If somebody smiles at me, if somebody says my name, if somebody tells me that they value what I said. They're not asking for major things. They're pleading to be recognized as human beings first. And when we interact on that level, everything changes at a profound rate. It really costs nothing to rehumanize your classroom, but it requires mass, courageous, disciplined leadership. And I don't think that education has that, not in the same way as other industries, or there's not an urgency to have really brave leadership, because schools are all about the status quo.
Well, we're going to change that.
Yes, are going to change
that. That's what we're doing. And that's why I wanted to bring the conversations and get, I mean, I'm so honored that you are here and talking like this, because you now have me so excited.
I'm so thrilled to hear that. I literally, because I've been nervous about sharing this quotient, because I don't want to put on something so authentic and so It's like saying, what is your hunger quotient? You know, like putting a number on something and being really careful that it's used in the right way and that the tenets of mattering are honored from both a scientific and a humanistic perspective. But it excites me to enter this conversation. And that's really what I'm working with the university teams is gathering insight, as I've always done, from teachers, from leaders, from researchers, and then putting it together and making this almost a crowdsourced initiative, an open source initiative, so that we can figure out what would we do with an algorithm like this? What would we do if we knew what our mattering quotient was? The profound impact that could have is like, it keeps me up at night in the best ways. I'm just so excited about it. I've never been more excited about research.
Oh, I love it. Well, so I'm going to have to end pretty soon but I want to bring back that you started your life as working in neuroscience and you're back. So I think when you have that hunger for learning and deep research, it doesn't go away. And when you find, so I really think that's what happened. You came up with the choose to matter, but you realize that it's so much deeper, and that's why you're doing it.
Absolutely. And seeing, I think, what the ultimate testament, because believe it or not, of all the communities that I share this message with, education is the community that is most, not necessarily the people on the ground, but sort of the gatekeepers, dismiss this. They dismiss the concept of emotion. They have done it for decades with emotional intelligence and social emotional learning as if it's a nicety. What is so profoundly different about working with industry and organizations is everything is about the customer experience and the customer's journey. All of their R&D is emotion driven. It is human driven. I will say that, I'll couch that with saying the most successful brands in the world. So brands from Disney to Apple to Harley Davidson to Starbucks have teams of neuroscientists at the molecular level analyzing and evaluating customer experience. Everything from the second that you walk in to the products they create, because we don't buy because we want something. We buy we make decisions through our emotion. We don't make decisions through our head. We make decisions with our heart. And understanding that the most disruptive force in the world and on the web, always and in our future, is emotion. And being able to understand how emotion, how we feel, drives how we show up. It drives energy. It drives innovation. It drives experience. We need to start taking it much more seriously.
Well, this is amazing, because if you think of our customers are our kids, then we better wake up soon, because they grow up. And so, oh, well, Angela, I'm afraid I have to pull this together. and I'm just, to me, this was just one of those, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to go to sleep tonight.
This is making my whole day. I just want to, I want to end with this message for your community.
Okay.
We all have a genius. We all have a story in our lives to live out, whether you call it our legacy, whether you call it our destiny. But I believe it is our moral obligation to be transparent about that journey to figuring out and taking ownership of who we are without hesitation, without holding back, in front of our kids, and be brave enough to share that journey with them, so that they are brave enough to go out into the world and live that journey. And so when I tell you that you matter, I am telling you that from a place of responsibility and obligation, and remind you that you are the hope. We are the hope. And we cannot stand in front of our kids and lead and learn and change lives and the world from a place of unworthiness. So don't for a second think that you don't matter and that what you do doesn't matter, because it does.
I hope they heard that, everybody.
Our community is a tough nut. They're really hard. You know, they want rigor, but they think of rigor in much different terms than the kind of rigor that the world thinks about. So,
yeah. Well, we're going to change that and we're all going to work together. Thank you so much.
Please connect with me anytime. And as the research progresses, I will absolutely keep you posted.
Thank you for listening to the Rethinking Learning Podcast and my conversation with Angela Myers. Look for a complimentary blog post about Angela, and we'll have loads of resources and links for you. Please subscribe to the podcast and leave a review on iTunes. You can also subscribe to my website, barbarabray.net, to receive announcements and updates so you don't miss any of the conversations.